So, thank you all for watching. I am Kevin from Wayfact, a small software agency in Austria, and I'm here with an amazing guy, Risa Shokri. Maybe take a shot and introduce yourself.
Hi guys. Kevin, thank you for the introduction. My name is Risa Shokri. I think Kevin and I know us about 5 years or 6 years. I'm also a software developer.
Quite a time, yeah.
Yeah, quite a time. And I'm also a software developer and engineer from Austria. And yeah, today we thought we can provide you some useful thoughts about DevOps. So Kevin, maybe you...
Sure.
Yeah.
No stress, just for all our viewers. Maybe you see a black box on the right or whatever. It's just for the YouTube comments, actually. So if you comment on Facebook or whatever platform we are streaming to, I think we have multiple, then just keep that in mind that we see the comments only after the live view. If you comment on YouTube, we will see it here live and we can react to it and let you know more about it. Maybe in future I will find a way to make that more convenient and to aggregate all those comments to one place, but just to let you know. So maybe let's start with today's topic, just DevOps. Yeah, Risa tested it right now and it works quite well. I'm happy that this worked out. DevOps, and we thought that we don't just make a tutorial or go too much into details, because there are a ton of great or amazing tutorials and videos out there, and I think we should or need to compete with those. I think it would be more valuable for all viewers if we maybe just talk about our experience and what tools maybe we found valuable or whatever. And maybe Risa, you have some sort of a first introductory lesson learned from your DevOps experience, or how did you start, actually? Maybe that's interesting as well. How did you come to DevOps?
Yes, a very good question. 10 years ago, I started playing around with a Linux server and just deploying some open source stuff, remote NAS. You can from anywhere from the world, you can access to your data and some stuff. But it was it was not really development, it was just only deploying stuff on Linux server. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I started developing software on a university. And it was isolated, yeah. It was you are on your local host and everything works on my machine. And it was everything easy and everything chill. And the first time I deployed my software to a VPS server, a Linux VPS server, it was a little bit scary because nothing works. Easy things authentication or HTTPS and rules about XRF and so stuff, nothing works. And also deploying the software, I found a bug and I have to make some really weird stuff to deploy the software again and again, yeah? Mm-hmm. And it continued, it was a really painful lesson. Also one painful thing was I developed Java software with Oracle JDK.
Okay.
And everything works on Oracle JDK, and on Linux it's quite uncommon to use Oracle JDK because you have to download like binary, like some weird binary stuff from Oracle. And it's not an installer, it's like very weird. It's not like you cannot like type in HTTP or ATP GET. You have to like type very weird stuff in a Linux server. So I tried OpenJDK and the same software worked on Oracle but not on OpenJDK. So it was like very painful for me. And
so the actual promise of Java, like code once, one everywhere, was like not that well elaborated for production. What is what you want to say, right? Or at least in you have made the experience. Maybe it's not in general a problem, but maybe in your specific use case, that was an issue.
Absolutely, in my humble opinion. Like everything changed. You introduced it actually. We were abroad in like our semester abroad, and we were like in the States, and you learn a lot about Docker and Kubernetes.
And no, not Kubernetes at that time. That's that was too early.
Okay, but I remember actually the time like you were like in a train.
I was curious.
on our little startup back again, and you talked about like Docker and Kubernetes, and I heard like something about Docker, and for me it was like virtualization but less secure. I didn't know anything about Docker. I thought but it's I played a little bit around, and then I found out okay, this is the future.
Game changer.
This is an absolute game changer, because as a developer it's very important. And in my job also, like many other people I know from the development, just like developer only guys, they are just thinking about it works on my machine. Yeah. And this is like a very bad mindset, because you have to engage with like other services, with other people, with other machines, and you have to make sure that you understand the whole solution, the whole system, to provide your customer a better experience. You need to understand the whole system, and you need also understand the deployment process. And it's, I think, very bad to separate administrators and developers. They should be like one. Like you need to have an understanding, a basic understanding about network, about Docker, about Kubernetes. Because like I have like every day I have like the same problem in my current job, because like the developers only developing, they don't know anything about Docker and nothing about Kubernetes. I am the only guy who knows about Docker and Kubernetes in our company. And they're just providing source code, and I then write the Docker files. And then, I need to configure like the services, like single microservices. I have to configure them with environment variables or with JSON files. And nothing works because some guy forget that I need to change some environment variable. It's not localhost, it's like other IP, it's the other domain, and they forgot it because they don't think about it. And this takes for me like very like a huge amount of time, and also for the other guys, because I have to write about the guys, hey, we have to debug this, and then okay, like Twitter, I will say, oh, you forgot to read an environment.
Please continue. You talked and I interrupt you. Sorry.
No, everything okay. I just have like this and was previously in a startup, and the startup was like completely different mindset. Like every person was also DevOps. Like every person who do like local development who also like the remote deployment. It was like a whole other thing. Yeah, and I thought, oh, this is like, it's 2018, every company and every person is like that. But no, it's not common. It's like the complete opposite of common. And this should like change, because this costs like tons of money, like really tons of money.
Yeah, way too much actually. Because it, for sure, we have to I think we have to consider it from a business perspective as well, because we cannot teach Docker and Kubernetes to all developers. And I think more or less it's some sort of quality management which is missing here, and that's in most cases, I think, only bigger companies or larger companies start to introduce after they really, really, really encountered the need for something like that. And I think that's, yeah, maybe we, I think it's, that's the actual pain point, not that, that's just my opinion, that not enough developers know about Docker, because basically they just have to know about environment variables, right? If they know that, and they know, hey, for example, if I want to deploy an Angular application with Ingress and have some sort of a subpath or something like that, then I have to make that base URL dynamic too, right? I think if developers know such things, that could be enough. For sure it won't be enough after all, but I think that will avoid 80% of all errors and things you mentioned, which will cost an incredible amount of money and resources. And if such companies start to enforce some sort of quality guidelines, not just like reviewing code, which is also most of the time like reviewing, you know, like show me the code, and yeah, that's a problem with most companies actually, I think. It's better than no review, but it's still, not as it should be, I think. What are your thoughts on that?
You're absolutely right, like 100%, I think so. Because like the main point is, or the main pain point is like quality and quality insurance and quality management. Like small companies doesn't have it, like very small companies. It maybe they don't need it because they're like very small, very agile, and if you're like two or three people in a company, somehow this works, yeah. And like really large companies, yeah, they have something like that, yeah. But now I am like in a company where like the team was very small and everything works, and then they doubled the team size, and it's changed like the whole thing, because now you really need code review, and now you really need a quality management system and a task management system, everything. And they didn't need this like 1 year ago, and also they didn't need like DevOps. They were just only on Windows systems, and okay, like one guy know everything to deploy, and it's fine. But now we introduced like some new things that really help us, and especially deploying every fucking day. Not for the customer, not now. Next week, I think we will deploy also for the customer. But we have like every branch, every important branch, like the main branch and the development branch, and we have also like a nightly or playground branch, and we deploy this every day, and we do like testing every day. Great. And then if some person think, okay, I have to introduce a new service, that's fine. But he need to make sure, okay, he build the skeleton, and then the next day this thing is online. And if something breaks, if you don't see like if you see exceptions on the log because you forgot something, you have like really fast feedback. And it's like really bad to like be alone, develop a service, and like 2 days before the demo, oh, okay, so we stick all the service together and this works. Because if you really do this like 2 days or like 1 week before delivery, everything will break. Like nothing will work, or like everything will work but really slow, because you forget like TCP communication is slow. And yeah, this is like, I would say it's like something between you need quality management, and also you need like some fancy technologies like continuous delivery and continuous deployment to make sure that you always know what the guys, what their developers are actually developing. It's going in the right direction. And it's especially true with UI. So it's very important that the customer give the customer like pretty fast feedback. And this is not only technology, and it's not only task and quality management. It's like a combination of two, I think.
Yeah. So actually, your experience has, just to recap this for a second for our viewers, it's like you say you have made the experience that you absolutely need up to as soon as your company gets to a certain scale, you need some sort of staging, develop a dev and production environment separately, like where you just can test out conveniently and on a regular basis, especially how your new services or new features work out. And I think we have a viewer who knows you.
can you repeat the question?
I didn't actually ask a question. I'm just recapping what you have said. I just got confused because of the first comment. I 100% agree on that. And for sure, that's really, really, really important, especially if you have to deal with a greater amount of customers, I would say. Because as soon as you have more than two or three customers, customers will start to ask for, let's say, specific use cases which your current solution doesn't cover, let's say, right? And as soon as you have introduced like custom routines, custom algorithms, if you do that, depends on the management maybe, then these testing environments become a lot more important. And I think, as you said, CI/CD, if you have some fancy tools out there, especially for CI/CD, there are a ton and incredible amount of amazing tools. It's just like that. Amazing tools what you can use to save a lot of time, a lot of resources and money. And it's almost, it makes me somehow sad sometimes that actually it's the best for the company if you devote some resources to that, to make it somehow a priority within your company to ensure the quality of your applications, right? And to maintain actually customer centricity, right? That the customer is in the middle of your development cycles. If you can deliver fast, deliver without a lot of bugs, your customer will automatically feel happy, will automatically be satisfied because new features, he asked before, just 2-3 weeks ago or 1 week ago, depends on how fast you are, worked perfectly fine the first day, time they tried. And if this isn't the case, the perception actually of the quality of your product, I think, dramatically decreases, especially if this happens on a regular basis. But maybe that's just my opinion, and I wish every company in the world that they have an incredible amount of success, no matter how they work and what approach they choose. Or, I don't know. I talked now a lot as well. What's your view on maybe that, or maybe another question, which might be, what kind of tools, what kind of infrastructure would you recommend to the regular or common company out there? Just like 10 to 30 employees, I would say, that's that employee span actually, amount of employees where you usually don't have really, really, really the best experts in-house because you don't have the resources for that. And at the same time, are in the need for sophisticated infrastructure, right? what are your recommendations? How would you set up CI/CD pipelines? How would you, just some thoughts. Don't have to write like, I don't know.
I don't want to go too specific to certain products, but in general, this experience, if you are as a political standpoint, if it's okay to go full on cloud, it's cheaper for you regarding the hours you spend on the whole DevOps thing, right? So if you use, let's say, GitHub DevOps or GitHub pipeline, GitLab pipeline, or like Azure or Google pipeline, and they have like a lot of templates, like pre-configured templates, and it's depending on your programming language, on your framework, it's like really easy to, like you should like try to play around with like the cloud solutions first, if this is like okay as a political standpoint. And if your company need to have like 100 person on premise, that's expensive. Not regarding like the license, but regarding maintaining the pipeline and so on, like it's very expensive.
Yeah.
So try, if it's possible, don't be paranoid, just use cloud solutions for pipeline. It's much cheaper, it's so much cheaper, it's so much easier, and you get like instant feedback, especially like on, if you are on GitHub or GitLab, a developer can just like say, okay, I create a pull request, and then the pipeline automatically creates a preview link. You like 5 minutes later, you can click on the preview link, and a test system only for this pull request is created in the background. And with GitHub, it's really simple. You can do like with maybe an Angular application. With GitLab, you can deploy a whole Kubernetes application in the background with form pull request. Yeah.
Okay, this is really crazy.
This is crazy. Yeah.
Oh wow, okay. I didn't know that with the Kubernetes cluster in GitLab. That's really interesting.
So
okay.
Absolutely. And GitLab, you have like you have like on premise with GitLab also. You have like the cloud GitLab.
Yeah.
And the thing is with GitLab is you can use the cloud for the pipeline, and if the computing gets too expensive, you can outsource only the computing, like the build process, to your own infrastructure. So you can be like cheap and also on the cloud, and then just like have like a VM somewhere in your office also with like 20 cores or so, and then you're still cheap because you just spend like $2,000 for like 2 or 3 years and not every month like $1,000 for the infrastructure. So you can also mix together things if you are.
Amazing. I 100% agree with you, Risa. That actually it reminds me of the saying, use existing solutions, right? It's why that's their service. They want customer satisfaction as well as you want for your customers, right? So if they want to ensure that you are happy with your deployment, with scalability, availability, and maybe even data privacy, depends maybe.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah, actually, for sure, it depends always on the use case. If you have some critical infrastructure, like maybe you are energy provider or water or anything like that, maybe you have some regulations that you have to host it in-house, and that's all fine, and we don't argue against that. That's incredible. That's for sure. That's viable. I think that's the right word. I don't think so, but that's the right approach actually. And we just talk about the regular company of I would say from zero employees to, I would say, X, if you, depending on the sector you're working in. And yeah, actually, I think we are both Docker and, depending on the use case, Kubernetes advocates. Tell me a little bit more about it. How did you, what was your first objection or your first argument against Docker when you first got in touch with it, got contact with it?
I thought Docker is like some sort of virtualization, and but less secure because you're just sharing like one kernel. And I mean, this is like BS, because Docker has nothing to do with security. It doesn't make a system more secure or less secure. In some edge cases, it can make it more secure or less secure, but usually it doesn't care about security at all. And so this was like my first impression. So like, who needs this? Because like, I have a VM and it's fine. And then, yeah, you told me like more about Docker when you were back from US. And then I thought, okay, it sounds interesting. And then I started developing. I was like in a startup, and we started like developing with .NET Core 3.1 on Linux.
Yeah.
And like, you cannot really use .NET without Docker. It's. I mean, yeah, you can build maybe a Windows application, but it's pretty useless without Docker. It's theoretically possible, but with every deployment you have to build everything and use a SDK and zip it. So, and with .NET you can just like use Visual Studio, like right click and then add Docker support, and the Visual Studio just build like a Docker file, and it was wow, okay, this is cool. For like also like the first deployment, the startup used like a long time just like Docker Compose. Mm-hmm. Usually Docker Compose only for local development. But you can somehow use it, like if you're not really, if it's not really a scalable, high available solution, you can just use Docker Compose. If you need like something like more, with more security, more options, there is just Kubernetes and nothing. I think it's nothing less and nothing more. I think Kubernetes has just like a pretty much high market share.
Yeah.
But this was like not your question. I think I just thought.
No, it's fine. I want to know. I think our viewers want to know more about your experiences. And if you shift a little bit from the question, it's completely fine. I think it's great. Just to refer to your answer, I think if you would have started with .NET framework with Windows containers, maybe your feedback would be so positive after all. But that's just my impression with Windows containers.
It was like not your first contract with Docker, but it was like last year or this year you start with Windows containers.
I had to, yeah.
This is like pretty painful, right? This is like hell.
It's already hell if you just have to use Windows containers, that's right. But as soon as you have to mix them, Linux and Windows containers, it gets even worse. And container orchestration and cloud hosting gets even more complicated and more like cherry picking, which of those 100 option is still working with my use case. And it just degrades down to just a tiny bit, like Azure container instances, if you and stuff like that. Kubernetes is almost the only option if you really want to mix Windows and Linux containers and orchestrate it. So Docker Swarm and so on is not really possible, that use case. And yeah, it's really a pain point, I would say.
So you wouldn't recommend it at all, or I mean, there is some legacy code and not.
Yeah.
You cannot run everything on Linux, right? So if a company has a new fancy Linux container and some old, not so fancy Windows applications, what should they do? Like still running them on VMs, or is it worth it to switch on Docker for Windows?
I think you have an own opinion for that, and I would be curious for that too. After that, actually, it depends. If you, for example, if it's .NET framework, that's one reason why you could possibly need Windows containers. Maybe you could consider upgrading to .NET 5, right? Where Linux containers become an option too, and upgrading to .NET 5 shouldn't be that big of an issue, actually, because you should upgrade your framework after all, and that should work, actually. I think in that case, yes, for sure. As soon as .NET 5 becomes, I would say, really production ready, I'm not really informed about that. And in other cases, for sure, if you really depend on some Windows container, it's unavoidable. And I think in most companies, after a certain scale, I would say, you will have Windows containers. It's unavoidable. But this doesn't reduce the pain point, actually, for DevOps engineers, I would say. But
all right.
As soon as the Kubernetes cluster is working, it's fine.
So it's maybe easier on Azure if you are running on Azure and you could upload DLLs to Azure. Is it like something possible to just make sure that Azure take cares of like building or maintaining container, or is it not possible?
What do you mean with DLLs? Like really? Let's say
I have like a .NET framework application. It's not .NET Core, and I have like the source code, and I want to deploy it to Azure,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't want to take care of Windows or something like that. I just want to deploy it and make it scalable. So on the load, the service is like reproduced automatically. Has Azure like some options without Kubernetes to do the magic auto-scaling and take care of the right framework and the server behind the .NET application?
Actually, to be honest, great question, by the way. I didn't deploy too much Windows containers yet. As said, I just started with Windows containers last year. So what I did was deploying it in Azure Container Instances, and I wouldn't recommend that, actually, because I think it's not really suitable for maybe even production use. Not because it's bad implemented by Microsoft or something like that, but rather because I have read it somewhere that it's more or less for testing environments and something like that. But maybe I'm wrong, and I hope so, because I have a place where it's in production, and it's working. It's fine. But I think if you just have to deploy some Windows containers, there are for sure several possibilities to deploy those containers. But if they have to interact with Linux containers, like via HTTP, and maybe you want to hide the Windows container behind your network or something like that, after that point, I think it might get complicated without Kubernetes. But as said, I didn't deploy too much on Azure itself yet with Windows containers, so maybe I'm not the right person to answer that question. Or maybe you have some input for that.
All right. Not really. I have, fortunately, zero experience with Windows containers.
Great.
But I understand, yeah, there's a lot of legacy code, and in our company we try to adapt some .NET framework to .NET Core or .NET 5.0. It's not that easy. You cannot just take the code and adapt it. You have to spend, like, especially if you do some fancy stuff with like this is like some special streaming product. If you are like taking MP3s, decode, encode, and like really deep C sharp stuff, you cannot just take it and adapt it to .NET Core without like really, really deep refactoring. And at this point, like there are assigned some old projects without tests and without anything, and it's really hard to refactor them. So, write fucking tests. This is like so important.
Agreed.
It's so important. And like really small teams or mid-sized teams, it's not quite yet that the philosophy is not there to write tests. And this has also like something to do with DevOps, I think, because you really need test cases. Not for everything, but let's say if you have like a validation, and if you have like API and really a complex validation behind the API, so if you want to save something, it has to validate like against 10 other tables, and it's like really complicated algorithms, you need a test for that. Because the code is, you can document it how much you want, the code becomes totally unreadable if you have like a complex validation. And if like for 1 year later, or like 6 months, or three weeks later, if some other guys or like the same developer have to refactor this or add something, he gets like a little bit, I would say like some weird feeling, like
I don't want to touch it, but it's there and it works somehow, just like
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. And you need tests for that. You need tests for the special cases and also for general cases. And it costs you less. It costs the whole company much less to just have tests at the beginning.
I completely agree, especially if you want to build a product, let's say, which should grow over several years, you know, which you don't plan to throw away next year or something like that. So in that case, you should for sure write a lot of tests. But I think it's always, and that's maybe the reason why many companies don't write tests, is the trade-off between non-productive code, I would say, which doesn't make actually a customer satisfied, but if you think long-term, for sure it does, but in the short term it doesn't. And for sure also developer productivity, right? If you have tests, you don't have to test it manually all the time, right? And ensure that you don't break anything with your little change, and if that happens, I think you already have lost, and it will just get more difficult. The more code you have, the more features you have, how do you plan to maintain this? And
absolutely. I mean, also, like, I wrote some code, and there was like a test case, and then the test case was like 80% of the tests go through and 20% not. And I had to do like some deployment stuff, and some other guy take care of my code and continue my work. Because the test cases were there. The code was like not really documented, but it was okay for the guy because, you know, okay, there are tests, I have to just battle against the tests. Like at some point, the tests will go through and it's fine. And like maybe one very important thing that I didn't know like last year, but I know now. I thought you just need unit tests, but this is like not unit tests is good and fine, but it's not the whole point. Like We are now at a point that we need integration tests and system tests. Mm-hmm. And the system test just calls the API of our system, and we have we're not running only on a test system on local host or only on the pack, and the tests we're also running the tests on a cluster, because we found out that the application runs different in a productive or a product near the production system, as a production ready system. It's behaving differently, like timing and everything is different. So if you write your test not only on very small unit tests, but also like integration tests, you really know, okay, how will the application behave on production? You can run tests at parallel, and then you know, okay, like what's the performance hit on production against localhost. So this is like something to consider. Not only think at small units, also think at integration, large scale tests, and make this. We'll be running our tests also on Docker. So the test is a Docker, and this Docker is like just like a client of the API. So yeah.
Cool, amazing. I 100% agree. I would even go one step further and would say, after, if you already have like testing and production environment, maybe that's also the time to introduce at least a simple health check, you know, because especially if you run it in containers, for sure Kubernetes and so on and Docker itself knows somehow if a container is running or not. But for example, if you're if you have an Angular application with Nginx within one container, I know it's not best practice with Kubernetes and so on. You do it with ingress and services, and with Docker Compose you can do it also in a better manner. But if you don't have, then if you only use Docker, for example, then you cannot be sure if this container is truly running, if the Angular application is really accessible. And especially if you have some sort of WebSocket or anything like that, stuff which is dependent on other services, and I think health checks could dramatically also increase customer satisfaction. But what's your point of view? Is it over-engineered, or what would you say? After what point would you introduce something like that?
It's absolutely not over-engineered. It's a must in every application. And I would extend this on logging, centralized logging. So you need, like, if you have like a monolith, it's fine. Just make sure that you have some sort of logging, and then you save it in a file or something like that. If you have like two or three or four or many, many services, you need a centralized instance, a logging server like SEC and like ELCastec, like there are thousands of them. And you need to push the logs to a centralized server. Especially, you need a concept for that. Let's say you have your browser and you have a request. You have to make sure that the first API point, you give the request a unique ID. Mm-hmm. And then if the request go to five different services, we have to make sure that the ID stays the same. So if something is wrong, yeah, the user get a message, I cannot do this because like exception. I have no idea what's happening. You just give like the user ID, and then please write the support. Or even better, your browser, your Angular application, just give like in background that in a other API, hey, an exception on the browser is wrong, and you get like a message, hey, we just sent like our customer support. This happens, sorry for that, we will take care of that. Yeah. And because like big services doing that, like Amazon also, if you do something like that, they just write, hey, sorry for that, we noticed that, and we have like a backlog of this message. And I don't say like the Amazon, because like this is like out of scale, but if something happens, and it's just only on production, just with your customer, you cannot reproduce this without good logging. Centralized logging with unique IDs, and then you have like a centralized server with some search engine like Elasticsearch. I mean, this is like a complete ERK stack. It's like a complete open source stack. You just like install it and forget about this. Yeah. And you search the ID of the request, and then you find out, okay, this happens. And you need some useful information about logging, like a method, input, output, and then you can find out, okay, what happened there. Otherwise, it's forever lost, and it's you cannot go to debug a production system with your IDE. It's impossible. It's not.
Yeah, but actually, I think many companies get quite creative. but I think you know what I mean, right? They get some other ways to debug. But I think I really enjoyed the conversation with you, and I think we could talk many, many hours about that. But I think maybe we should split up our live stream, because it's already, I'm surprised now, 1 hour and 45 minutes. And yeah, maybe let's split it up.
Absolutely. I think it's only 45 minutes, 1 hour, right? It's 45 minutes.
Facebook says 1 hour and 45 minutes, but maybe you're right.
I think it's 45 minutes. YouTube says.
I hope so. Okay. Yeah. And Facebook is saying something different. Okay. That's great. Okay. Maybe you have something, some closing words to say. Some key takeaways for if they don't even use Docker. Or, I don't know, some first steps towards that DevOps journey, or tell them, maybe you have something, one or two sentences, not too much, just.
Absolutely not, because if I speak, I speak for 10 minutes, so.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fine. We have already got 45 minutes of that, so it's great.
Right.
Thank you, Risa, for your time. I really enjoyed it, and I would be really, really happy if you have time for that in the next time again. I don't know. Let's see. And thank you for all viewers. I was surprised that quite a few people watched the whole session through. You might be surprised, Risa. And not even just one person, but multiple. Thank you all for watching, and Risa, I think we will talk after this session for shortly, and yeah, thank you.
Yeah, guys, thank you for watching, and also you, Kevin, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Thanks.